Welcome back. This is the fourth session, and let's see what we got. So this week we have only computer exercises, four exercises, and first is about the co-integration, and then the second, third, and fourth are about CARTS modeling. So in the first exercise, we're asked to analyze the co-integration between the short-term T-bill, that's the three-month rate, and the 10-year treasury yield using Engel-Granger method, and do this for two separate subsamples. So first, let's start importing the data. First, we need to set our working directory. In my case, that's the directory. Then we'll load the libraries needed. And finally, the data. This first line, the highlighted, is the data, an Excel file, and there we'll take T-bills and 10-year treasury rates, and then we'll transform these two series as a monthly time series. And after that, we'll separate the whole sample into two subsamples. Loading obviously takes some time. And before we start doing the co-integration test, let's look at the spread between the 10-year treasury bond minus 3 months T-bill. And from the previous exercises, you can probably remember this graph. I believe we analyzed this in the second during the second demonstration session. So from 1990s till around 2010, the process seems to follow a near unit brute process. So it'll take long drifts, but then it will change from near unit brute process to a kind of unit brute process. It only starts drifting downwards. First of all, let's check the stationarity of these individual series. First, for the first subsample of the 10-year, first subsample for the T-bill, that's the short rate. In a unit true test, the null hypothesis is that the series contains a unit truth. This is our test statistic, and these are the critical values. So when we compare this value to the critical values, we observe that the test statistic is smaller, implying that the null stays in power. In other words, the series contains a unit truth. What about the long-term interest rate? That's exactly the same. The null is the unit root. Then we just compare the test statistic to the critical values. Smaller, that implies the null stays in power, unit root. What about the second subsample? Here again, this series contains a unit root. And then what about the long-term interest rates? And again, unit root. So all of these series from two different subsamples contain a unit root. That is a necessary condition for doing a co-integration test. So In other words, these series entail a stochastic process, and now we're interested to study in studying whether these stochastic processes follow the same trend. Two series are co-integrated, they have a same trend. So first of all, let's run standard regression, the first phase of the Engel-Granger procedure, and see the results. Okay, here. When the short-term interest rate is on the left-hand side and the long-term interest rate on the right-hand side, we observe that the parameter is quite high, almost 190, and it is statistically significant pointing. So possibly there's a deeper relationship also. However, when we switch from the first subsample, that's before the bankruptcy of the Lehman Brothers, to the second subsample, that's after the bankruptcy, we observe that this coefficient of the long-term interest rate loses its statistical significance. So this means that there's probably some kind of structural change in the relationship between these variables. So in the next step, let's save the residuals from the model, and then let's study whether these residuals are stationary. So this is for the first subsample. Again, the null hypothesis is the series contains a unit root, then just compare the test statistic to the critical value. The test statistic is smaller, that is, the null stays in power, the series has a unit root. So in other words, the residuals of this series is stochastic, not stationary. So when it is stochastic, there's no constant, it is not stationary, it is not something that the series do not drift around each other. Let's do this test using the Akaike information criteria just for the sake of the robustness. And again, we find that the series is stationary. Excuse me, unit root. Contains a unit root. Test statistic is smaller than the critical value. The null stays in power. The series has a unit root. How about the second subsample? Unit root and unit root. In each case, the test statistic is smaller than the critical value, meaning that the null stays in power. The series contains unit root. It drifts stochastically. There's no fixed, in a sense, fixed relationship between the variables. Nevertheless, as the stationarity of the residual is not a necessary condition for doing an error correction model, we can nevertheless study the short-term behavior between this series. So, in other words, doing this unit root test, we found out that there's no long-term relationship between these variables. Nevertheless, we can check whether there's some short-term connection. So, error correction model for the first subsample and for the second are those. And let's check the first subsample. So, here, this is the term we're most interested in. This parameter has a negative sign as it's supposed to, so that is a good sign. So in why negative sign? So when there's a positive shock in the series, meaning that the series are drifting away from each other, this negative sign corrects the behavior of this series in the short run. So if they start to drift apart, there's a mechanism that drives them together. So that's as it's supposed to be, and it is statistically significant. So What does this mean? In fact, this is a really peculiar result. In earlier states, we find out that there is no long-term relationship between these variables, but now, according to our results, there's a short-term relationship between these variables. So, how can this be? There's a short-term, statistically significant short-term relationship, but no long-term relationship. You could think that the short-term implies long-term, but not in this case. So most obviously, it is the case that our model is wrong. We are missing something. The behavior of this interest rate is more complex than than the model we are applying. So that's the result here. What about the second subsample? Here, again, the coefficient has the right sign. It is negative, but not statistically significant. In other words, it is noise, not different from zero. So everything right there. So let's check. Let's check the properties of the residuals in the first subsample. Let's check whether there's an autocorrelation. So for sure, there's an autocorrelation in the series. When we reject the null, we're rejecting no autocorrelation. So that implies autocorrelation. And again, we're rejecting null. There's autocorrelation in series. What about the second subsample? Again, autocorrelation at the 5% level, and also autocorrelation in the 5% level. So, in general, what we did. I showed you how to do angle ranger procedure, but in this particular case, we got a little bit extreme example of it. We found out that in the first subsample, there's no long-term relationship between the variables, but in the second, but also that there's a short-term relationship. So in other words, this model does not fit into the data. This shouldn't be the case. Then let's see the second exercise. But before that, let's have a 2 minute break. My throat is somehow annoying. I'll get some water so I'm able to speak better. So just 2 minutes. Hopefully that will help. So second exercise, it's about arch modeling. So let's get right into it. So first of all, let's load the necessary libraries. And then the data. So again, we're studying these currencies data. And we're asked to divide the whole sample into two subsamples before the Lehman bankruptcy and after that. First of all, let's study the conditional heteroscedasticity for the whole sample and both subsamples. And in a B part, we'll run estimate a plain vanilla CARTS 1-1 model. So the first model is such only ARTS 1 model. So let's do that. Let's check the data. First of all, why even use a CARTS model? So let's plot the data. So for sure, these are the relative changes for the British pound. And just by looking at the graph, you can see that the variability of the series is not constant. Rather, it's varying over time. So it's a sign of conditional heteroscedasticity or the variability of the residual is not constant. So let's try to figure out what's the data generating process using a ARTS model. So okay, this is really nice way of showing how the CARTS model works. So here in the first part, we'll just run a equation like this, constant term and constant term. So we're only running estimating the series by the constant term. Let's check about that. So here the constant term is basically zero. So this process is almost like kind of we're only, in other words, we're only saving the residuals of the model and studying like that. So that was the mean equation we estimated. And in the next phase, we'll save the residuals. So we're doing like this. We'll take that's the observed variables, and then we subtract the constant term from it, and we'll get the residuals. So we'll save the residual and let's start analyzing that. And then we're asked to square it. And that's already done. So in the next phase, we'll run a model for the residuals. And when it's squared, it is not in the standard variation form. It becomes as a variance, as a second moment. So in the earlier, we estimated the mean equation, the first moment, then we transform it, the residuals into the second moment and start analyzing it. So here in this model, we're analyzing it using five different lags. So here, how you can figure that out, it's so this variable from the left-hand side says that from the sixth observation till the end of the series, and then on the right-hand side, we have t minus one, that's five, t minus two, t minus three, t minus four, and t minus five. So we're using five different lags to estimate that model, and let's check about that, how it's behaving. So here a lot of statistical significance here. So this means that the first lag of the model is that. So first of all, let's check the necessary conditions for the model. So first of all, neither of the parameters should be negative. That holds here. Secondly, if we sum the coefficients of the lagged variables, they should be below one. So for that also true. So how much is that? It's something like 140 or even a little bit lower. So that's also hold. And then we find that four out of five parameters are statistically significant at the 5% level. So a lot of statistical significance there. So what's the economic meaning of these parameters? So these are the impact of the shock from the last period. So in other words, from today's perspective, there's a shock coming to the series, and this is the impact of what's coming from the one period earlier, and this is the impact what's affecting today from 5 days ago. So there's shocks of the previous days are impacting the behavior of the series today. A lot of statistical significance there, so let's check how the residuals are behaving. So in this series, we have residuals on the y-axis and the fitted values of the models of the conditional volatility on the x-axis, and we see that this spread between these series starts to widen soon. So that's a sign of a heteroscedasticity. What about other observations of the series? Let's plot the residuals of the series. So this is that here. You can see how the residuals of the variability change. So there are times there are this crisis period, and then there's this huge outlier here. That's the Brexit over 8 years ago. If we square that, we get. Okay, if we square that, we can see even a higher impact of the outliers. If you want to see what's the total impact of the Brexit, let's us change the scaling a little bit. So if we square the exit impact, it's a really huge outlier in the series. What about the histogram of distribution of this series? This doesn't look good. Hopefully you can see it. I don't know why does it look like this? Okay, now it's better, a little bit better. So here, this is the distribution of the residuals. Here you can see that there's right skewness in the series. A sign, in other words, the residuals are not symmetric. And then there seems to be some fat tails in the series. This is the same graph in another form. Here you find the same results. There's right skewness and then some fat tails. And then using Google plot, let's check the normality of these residuals. So this is the data. Let's fit the theoretical line there. And if the data and this line are like in a perfect relationship, that's a sign of the normality. So we can see from here, from this difference between this straight line and this plot, empirical plots, that there are a lot of outliers in the series. The normality does not hold. So that was the first part. That was for the whole sample. And then let's do the same for the subsamples. So before the Lehman bankruptcy, the model looks like this. So here we get actually a different result. In an earlier example, when we did this for the whole sample, we got a lot of more statistical significance there. But here, when we started studying the first subsample, we get the different results. So here, only the first two lags are the statistically significant. One parameter has a negative sign. It shouldn't be. You cannot have negative standard deviation. That's a no-no. So that's a sign that this model is. This is not a good model for analyzing the data, studying what's happening in the data. So let's then check another second subsample. So here, first of all, parameters are positive. That's a great sign. And here, the results look like the same like in the whole sample. 4 out of 5 statistically significant. This is, I believe, but statistical significance is a little bit weaker. I believe this was 5% earlier, and this was 1% earlier. So a little bit weaker results there. However, in the second subsample, we have this bankruptcy of the Lehman Brothers, and that's a huge outlier in the series. And then we have this Brexit also in the second subsample. So most likely this outlier is messing our series here. In other words, the outliers are messing our calculating procedures so that we'll get statistical significance even though there is none. But let's then use a little bit more advanced model that is CARTS 1-1 model instead of ARTS 1 model. So first, we'll estimate a ARMA 1-1 CARTS 1-1 model. So here, ARMA 1-1 is the mean equation and CARTS is the second moment. That's the conditional volatility. So let's see what we got here. So first of all, the sum alpha and beta parameters have the right sign. Those are positive. So first of all, these three parameters above are for the mean equation, and then these three parameters are for the conditional variance. And sum of these two variables is below one, and they have the right size. So great, that's good. That's a good thing. But then when we look at the mean equation, when we take the value of AR1 and the value of the AM1, they're like opposites of each other. So basically, these variables are only canceling each other out. Both statistically significant, but they're just canceling each other out. So they seem to be not relevant there. What about the diagnostics? So first of all, the autocorrelation test, p-value is higher than 0.05 in each case, meaning that we have no autocorrelation in the series. And if we square the residuals and they study the same test, also the p-values are above 0.05, meaning no autocorrelation. What about the heteroscedasticity? P-values are again above 0.05, meaning that no heteroscedasticity, the null stays in power. Then let's study the stability of the parameters. Here, take the value, test statistic, and compare it to the critical values. Here, we observe that, for example, the beta parameter has some stability issues. It is rejected at the 5% level. So there's something is wrong with the persistence of the variance of the model. It's not working perfectly. And then the constant term of the variance equation is even rejected at 1% level. So that's the offset term in the variance. So there seems to be something wrong with the variance. And if we take the joint stability test, it is also rejected at the 5% level, meaning that there are some issues with the stability of the parameters. This could be well be the case because of this. Actually, this is the first subsample, so it cannot be Brexit. So nevertheless, there could be some outliers in the first subsample. So stability could be issue because of them. What about the sign bias test? So this is about whether the distribution is asymmetric or not. So here the null stays in power, each case above 0.05, but the joint effect of all these three tests is rejected. So there seems to be some issue of the asymmetry in the series. What about the difference between the empirical and theoretical distribution? It is rejected in each case. So in other words, it seems that we have assumed that the normal distribution is the true underlying distribution, but when we compare the empirical distribution to that, the tests are rejected. So this is a minor issue, but nevertheless, there's some stuff with the distribution that are not perfect. So first of the overall, we find out that the ARGMA 1.1 model was not necessary to use. So let's estimate the same model without the ARGMA 1.1 model and see whether there's any change in the results. For some reason, it's taking time again. But it should be ready quite soon. I adjust the memory of the computer a little bit so that there are no underlying processes there. So again, let's look at the. So we threw away the AR and MI1 orders from the series, and the results look actually like in the previous case. The beta parameter was around 0.9, and this was around 0.7 or 8 earlier. So there's nothing changes there. What about the autocorrelation? Check the p values all above the 0.05. No autocorrelation. The same also holds to the squared residuals. And also no heteroscedasticity in the series. The null stays in power there. What about the stability of the parameters? So here the joint test statistic is rejected at the 5% level. Let's see, earlier it might have been at the 1% level. Let's Let's check that. So no, it was earlier, it was the same also at the 5% level. So no changes there. And the individual parameters have also same values as earlier. And then we find some asymmetry in the series, sign bias test. It's about asymmetry in the distribution. And then we find out that the empirical and theoretical distribution are not the same. So the results remain the same, even though we estimated a lower parametric version of the model. So next. In order, it could be well be the case that there is there are some outliers happening in the series, and they are affecting the estimation. So let's try a model that has a little thicker tails. So maybe this model is better able to model what's happening in the tails of the distribution. So instead of using normal distribution, let's try student d-distribution. The difference between these two distribution is that the student distribution is better able to analyze or capture the tail behavior, and I'll show you immediately why is this the case. So here the black line is the empirical distribution, the blue line is the normal distribution, and the red line is the student's d-distribution. Here you can see that the student distribution has a thicker tails, and then just by comparing it to the black line, you'll see that it could well capture the empirical distribution have this minor shapes in the tails, so maybe student distribution is better able to capture the underlying distribution. So let's check the parameters again. Minor changes in the alpha and beta values. Earlier beta was 1.9, maybe 1. So the model seems to become a bit more marginally more persistence, and the shock impact becomes a little bit smaller. So the shock impact is transformed into the persistence impact of the volatility. And then there's the shape parameter. What is that? It is the degrees of the freedom for the student d-distribution. So here the rule of thumb is that if the estimated parameter is around 30, the distribution becomes quite loosely to the normal distribution. But here it is below 30, so it has more thicker tails. What about the autocorrelation test? P-values are higher than 0.05, no autocorrelation. The same also holds for the squared residuals, no autocorrelation. And also, let's test the heteroscedasticity in the model. Model is able to capture the heteroscedasticity in the residuals, change in the variability, all above 0.05. What about the stability of the parameters? So here the joint test is rejected at the 1% level. So again, the stability of the parameters seems to be an issue. And let's see what could be the case. So here the beta parameter, all of these individual parameters, omega, alpha, and beta are rejected at the 1% level. So we made a minor adjustment in the underlying distribution, and the parameters became more unstable. So the first question is, how can this be the case? So again, let's check the sign bias, that's the symmetricity of the distribution, and the joint effect is rejected. So there's some asymmetry in the distribution. It could be the right skewness I showed you earlier. I can also show that. So we're analyzing. No, actually, this is a different series. So sorry about that. So here we are analyzing Japanese Zen and not the bound as earlier. So it should be studied more closely. So that was not the right skewness I saw you earlier. So let's start figuring out what could be the case. So this is for the entire for the whole sample. So in the whole sample, remember we have the first of all the global financial crisis 2008. So it cannot be Brexit in this case because this is the Japanese yen. But let's see, it could be well be the case that the model is not able to capture the global financial crisis. So let's study whether there's a structural change in the underlying series. So for the first sub-sample before the Lehman bankruptcy, let's use a CARDS 1-1 model with student distribution. So here, the values remain relatively the same as for the whole sample. That's a sign that there's some the CARDS equation, the parameters for the CARDS equation seems to be quite stable, then that the outlier is not messing up them, but it is messing some other parts of the calculation. And then shape becomes a little bit higher than earlier. Earlier it was around 5, if I remember correctly. It was 5, so when the shape parameter becomes a little bit higher, that means that there are less outlier behavior in the series. Nevertheless, there are some outliers affecting the series. So first of all, then let's move into diagnostics, the autocorrelation, the null stays in power in each case. No autocorrelation in the residuals. What about heteroscedasticity? The null stays in power. No heteroscedasticity. And then let's move to the stability of the parameters again. Joint statistic of the parameters is rejected at the 5% level. So some issues with the stability of the parameters, but then we actually do find out that the individual parameters are quite well behaving. So we can trust that our conditional variance equation is well behaving, but something else is affecting the series that's creating some issues in the model. Nevertheless, the model seems to be able to capture the conditional variance of the series. Sign bias test, no sign bias test, so the null stays in power in each case. That is a So there's no asymmetry in the underlying distribution, and then the empirical distribution, the theoretical distribution seem to be quite well aligned. No, null is not rejected in any case, so that's a good sign. So here, this seems to be quite good model. This model seems to capture quite well the underlying behavior of the Japanese Zen series before the Lehman bankruptcy. So we can our guess is that there are a lot of things happening in the second subsample after the Lehman bankruptcy that will mess up the calculations, the estimation algorithm. So let's study that model. Minor changes in the values of the parameters. The shape parameter becomes smaller. That means that there are more outliers are affecting the series. What about the diagnostic autocorrelations test? The null stays in power in each case. No autocorrelation. What about the heteroscedasticity? The null stays in power in each case. No such. What about the stability of the parameters here? The joint stability is again rejected at the 5% level. And what about, okay, then the individual tests. So here we see the difference. Alpha parameter is the impact of the last period residuals and at today, so there are some stability issues. It is rejected at the 5% level, and the persistence of the variance beta 1 is rejected also, even at the 1% level. So for sure, there seems to be some heavy outliers that are affecting the stability of the parameters. So the problems are coming from the second subsample. And then when we look at the sign bias test, that is the asymmetry in the series. The first of all, here, the negative sign bias, the null is rejected at the 10% level. Well, that's not so bad, but there are minor sign there. So this means that when the null is rejected in the negative sign bias, that means that the larger negative SOGs have a different impact than the smaller negative SOGs. So there's some asymmetry in the level, asymmetry there. And the joint effect is again rejected. So overall asymmetry in the distribution. However, the theoretical and empirical distribution seems to be quite well aligned. So in the second exercise, we estimated the model for the whole sample and found out some problems, and then we divided into two separate subsamples and studied how they behave and find out that the issues are coming from the second subsample. That's after the Lehman bankruptcy. So, and we find out that the issues in the second subsamples are related to the asymmetry. So in the third exercise, let's start, instead of using cards 1-1, let's assume a asymmetric cards model. In the first case, it's G, key J R cards. So this is kind of threshold cards model. Here, the asymmetric effect it's kind of a leverage effect in the model. So for the sake of simplicity, you could think it like it that when there's a negative report, company is giving a negative report, the negative impact is huge next few days. So that's the asymmetry in the There's a normal stock price behavior, but then there's a negative report and there's a huge outliers are coming from this negative report. So here, this GJR model is only for the only for the this is for the negative, especially for the negative shocks. So let's estimate this model first. So here we are setting cards 1-1, and then we're adding the leverage parameter there, and let's see the results. But nothing is added into the mean equation. So here, values of the here the stationarity of the conditional is calculated a little bit differently than earlier. All of these parameters are positive. Great. Then the stationarity is calculated by taking the alpha 1 at alpha b, and then the gamma 1 divided by 2. I'm not 100% certain if I remember correctly. What was it that gamma should be divided by 2 here? But I believe it was divided by 2. I can't check that immediately, but if I remember correctly, it should be divided by 2. So here there are no, nevertheless, in this case, the sum of these parameters is below 1, so even though it would not be divided by 2, it wouldn't make any difference. So here, all good there. What about the autocorrelation? P value is it's well behaving, all above 0.05. The null station power there and the null station power here, no autocorrelation. What about the heteroscedasticity? No heteroscedasticity in neither case. What about the stability of the parameters? Okay, here the joint test is rejected at the 1% level. Some issues with the joint test. The individual parameters are quite well behaving, except for the gamma 1 parameter. That's the new parameter we added. That's modeling the asymmetry in the series. So some issues in modeling in the asymmetry. No sign bias, great. And empirical and theoretical distributions are also behaving well. So that was for the first subsample, and let's do the same for the second subsample. Here the results look quite familiar. Nothing to add there. Autocorrelation test, no autocorrelation. No heteroscedasticity. What about the stability of the parameters? After the bankruptcy of the Lehman Brothers, the null is rejected here. Also, some issues with the overall stability of the parameters. Okay, then, but when we start to look at the stability of the alpha and beta parameters, they're also become rejected at the 5% level. The critical value is here. Compare them. And also the gamma is rejected. So earlier we found, I believe we found some negative bias. So here we by adding the gamma 1 parameter, we were able to capture the negative sign bias in the model, but the joint bias there is still, there's still some joint bias. Nevertheless, that's not a bad, that's only rejected at the 10% level, not at the 5% level. So some minor issue there. Then the difference between the theoretical and empirical distribution is rejected. Some minor issues there. That's not a bad sign for the model, even though the tests are rejected there. So in the A part, we tried GJR CART model. Then let's try another model for asymmetric effects. This another model is exponential CART. And the good side of this model is that it allows, so as an exponential model, it allows the use of the logarithm. And when we're when we're using a logarithmic value, the sign of the parameters can be either negative or positive. In the standard model, only positive, but when we logarithm, when we make variability as a logarithmic scale, we can have negative values. So first, before the Lehman bankruptcy, using the exponential cards model. Here, the model becomes a better. Yeah. Here, our alpha one parameter has a negative sign speak of the logarithmic scale. That is no issue there. And overall, the conditional variance seems to be a necessary conditions for the stability. Stationarity are there. What about the diagnostics? First, autocorrelation tests look at the p value, neither above below the 0.05, no autocorrelation in neither case. What about the conditional heteroscedasticity? No such thing. What about the stability of the parameters? So here, joint stability. The statistic is even higher than earlier, so it is rejected even firmly. Okay, alpha the prop. So here, this is a well good finding. So here, beta one parameter is quite well behaving, and the gamma one parameter they're well behaving. But here, we find that the alpha one parameter is firmly rejected. This is a sign that there are some outliers are messing up the calculation. So in a more advanced study, we should control them better. In the next phase, if we would continue this analysis, we should go and start looking at what's happening in the mean equation and control things a little bit better there. So that was for the first subsample. What about the second subsample after the Lehman bankruptcy? Everything great here, nothing. Model seems to be quite well behaving. What about autocorrelation? No such thing. Null stress in power. Conditional heteroscedasticity, the null stress in power. And the stability of the parameters. Joint test is rejected at the 1% level, 5% level. What's the case there? And it is related in the second, after the Lehman bankruptcy, it's related to the overall stability of the conditional variance. And then there are some issues with the asymmetry. Okay, there seems to be some. Most likely it is these outliers again that are affecting the series. So in other words, issues in asymmetric parameter trying to capture the asymmetric effect in SOX are not able to capture the whole extent of the asymmetry. And then there are some issues with the persistence of the variability of the model. Meaning that the underlying series is behaving more drastically than the model is able to capture. What about the asymmetry? Only rejected at the 5% level, so that's not so bad. Then the theoretical empirical distribution seems to not fully coincide with the empirical distribution. Well, that's not the worst thing in the world, but some minor issues there. So let's check. We have talked about these outliers all the time, so let's study graphs a little bit. So here, these are the y-axis is the residuals of the series. X-axis is the time period. So these are the dates before the bankruptcy of the Lehman Brothers. So here you can see that the model is the green line here. Here you can see from the black line, you can see the shock happening at each day. And here you can see that, well, it is a good sign that the model is going in the right direction with the shocks. It is following the shocks in the series. But here, from the difference between these two, you can see that the model is not able to capture nuances of these shocks. So there are a lot of these huge shocks in the series, and they seem to be the overall issue of this model. Without squares. Okay, so this is just the behavior of the residuals. Here you can see that even though there are changes in the variability of the residuals, there are these shocks all over both sides of this series. So there seems to be there's something that. So the first question is why are there these high shocks? It is first, it could be the case that it is just a normal behavior of the exchange rate. Alternatively, it could be some structural thing, economically motivated behavior. So those are the extreme sides of the guesses. What about after the Lehman bankruptcy? So here again, let's compare the scaling of the series. Okay, here you can see the scaling is only from 0 to 7. So after the bankruptcy of the Lehman Brothers, the scaling changes quite dramatically. Here, the outlier behavior becomes even worse than earlier. So earlier there were a lot of outliers, but here there seems to be even more outliers affecting the calculation. And the model here, green line is what the model is able to capture from them. So here there's even more room that what the model could capture. And this is the pure residuals here for sure. A lot of volatility clustering in addition to the outliers. So those are the things that should be studied more carefully. Okay. In the next part, in the fourth part, we're trying to apply Karts in mean model. So here in the standard Karts model, the mean equation is estimated first, and then we'll take the residual and start the modeling that. Here, the mean and variance equations are estimated simultaneously at the same time. So that's the difference in the modeling. So first, let's add a standard deviation in the mean equation and see what's happening over there. Okay, here we have an AR1 parameter. Basically, the estimate is zero, not statistically significant. And then we have the standard deviation of the volatility in the mean equation. It is also zero. So those are the new things. Other than that, no autocorrelation, no autocorrelation, no conditional stochasticity. Some issues with the stability of the parameters, and I believe this is for the whole sample. This is for the whole sample. Some issues with the persistence of the variability. And some asymmetry in the distribution and different, and the theoretical and empirical distribution are not the same. Nevertheless, adding these new terms did not bring anything new. So instead of using standard deviation in the mean, let's try to use variance in the mean. So we're squaring the term previous term, and let's see whether there's change. No, nothing changes there. AR1, not statistically significant, and ArchAM, not also statistically significant. No change in the autocorrelation test or conditional heteroscedasticity and stability of the parameter tests, the same results as earlier, like with the asymmetry test. So next, let's exclude the AR1 from the mean equation and see what will happen. Okay, nothing changes there. So for short, adding these extra terms in the mean equation was not helpful. That was not useful. In addition to, nothing else changed in the model. So that was not the issue. So what we should rather do is that we should start analyzing more. We should start looking more carefully what are the details in the data, what everything is happening there, and start to control them and see whether that helps in the modeling. So next part, this is the forecasting part using CARTS model. So we'll skip this part and why it's because if I run this estimation, it will take like 45 to 1 hour to computer to calculate them. So it's so time consuming that we'll just skip them. Nevertheless, here is the code. If you want to do this kind of analysis, sometimes you can use this code. And let's move in the final part of this fourth exercise session. So it's about DCC CARTS modeling. So it's multivariate CARTS modeling. So here, instead of analyzing a univariate series, we'll have three series. That's the British pound, euro, relative changes in the euro, and relative changes in the Japanese yen. And that is our data matrix. So first, let's calculate our model and see the results. So how this estimation work? We're separately estimating three univariate CARTS processes, and then we'll take the conditional variance of each of these equations and the residuals of each of these equations and combine them together and study how they are correlated. So, for example, if you remember how the parameters of the British pound look, they're like exactly like this, like earlier estimated, as well as the Japanese yen, almost the same. So here the interesting thing is the DCC A1 and DCC B1 parameters. So both are statistically at the 5% level, meaning that there seems to be dynamic correlation between all the residuals and conditional heteroscedastic conditional variances of all of these univariate models. So they're in a higher level, they're connected together. Sum of this parameter is below one. It is so the correlation is stationary. No negative signs there. So let's start analyzing what's happening at the in the so-called second order of these individual models. Here's some code. So let's first save the covariance and correlations of this series. And if you want to look some individual values, you can do it like this. Then let's plot the model. So this is the conditional correlation between British pound and euro returns. So here, what to look here is trends and changes in the trends and overall stability of this series. So here there's an upward trend until, I believe that's 2007. So there's a structural shift in the series happening in 2007. So there's a sign that there's a structural change in the series there, and then a new phase starts. Seems to be quite stable there. It ends around 2011, and this was for the pound to euro. And then there's this little bit higher correlation that's related to the euro crisis from 2000. The worst phase of the euro crisis was from the summer 2011 till the summer of 2012. So it's this phase here coincides that, and then it reverts drastically to the negative and from the positive to the negative. So but it's overall seems to be stable there with some minor changes. So that was only for the euro bound conditional correlation. Let's add another series there. So earlier we looked only at the time series above. In addition, let's add Japan euro and Japanese yen. This seems the behavior seems to be somewhat similar, but not so drastic there. There's a drop. So if you think about straight line there seems to be a drop from here for somewhere here to here, and this seems to be the new mean tendency the correlations are reverting to, and then some changes. And the pound to yen returns looks quite like the same as euro yen. So these two series, one middle and below, are quite similar, and then there's this euro bound series. that's a little bit more distinct from these. So let's calculate a dynamic hedging ratio. So dynamic means something that is changing over time. So using the standard formula of the hedge ratio, we'll just take the stuff and calculate this data, and then let's plot them. Okay, here, the red line is the hedge ratio of the euro British pound. How is it changing over time? So there are some a po positive correlation means that this series have a tendency to move into the same direction. If you're looking for hedging something positive, you should look at the negative. So if the series are moving in the opposite direction, if you find a correlation like that, you can use the movements of the series to hedge against each other. So in other words, if another series crashes, you can assume that you have a hedge in another series. You can assume that it will bring you the profit. So here, this hedge ratio seems to be somewhat distinct. Here, the blue line around from when the Lehman bankruptcy happened, that's somewhere around here. It drifts to oscillating around zero. So that means that the euro and Japanese yens are not corrected there. Here, nevertheless, it is interesting that here there seems to be a negative correlation between this series. That means that when the hedge ratio of the euro British pound, when they are moving in the same direction, the hedge ratio of euro yen is going to the opposite direction. So there's a negative correlation there. Then again, blue is going upwards, red is going downwards. And here again, red is going up and blue down. So possibly some hedging. I believe it. This would be more interesting to continue using another some other metrics. And here we have hedge ratios of British pound to Japanese yen and euro Japanese yen. So these are moving almost perfectly together. So there's nothing interesting there. So that was it this time, this day. So have a next week we have the last exercise session, and then we'll start doing the computer exercises. So have a nice rest of the week. See ya.